Hello, and welcome to the second episode of Bring Back the Bustle, a podcast about revitalizing rural America. I'm Siobhan Jones, your primary host. This episode is about a special tax incentive known as Opportunity Zones. Opportunity Zones are all about tax-free appreciation. Now I wish this was like kindergarten, when we used to watch Sesame Street or Pee Wee Herman, and they'd have these, when the special word was said, it would blink on screen. And at the end of the episode, it might have been Mr. Rogers, I don't remember. But at the end of the episode, they'd ask you how many times had you heard the special word. The special term for today is tax-free appreciation. Throughout this episode, listen for those words, because with tax-free appreciation, you don't work and you don't pay taxes on your income. Those of you who are listening from your job where you provide personal labor and then pay up to 50% in federal and state taxes on your compensation, you'll want to learn how to opt out of that system and into the tax-free appreciation system. Opportunity zones, what are they and how do they work? Opportunity zones are low-income census tracts selected by government to induce private investment in those communities. So the government says, hey, we want this community to succeed. And they give it a tax designation that makes investors see green and flock to the area. Here's an example that you may recognize. You may live in a nice part of town, but a few blocks away is an underdeveloped, low-income part of town that has a curious number of storage facilities. Some robber barons, or fellow investors, if you want to call them that, build storage facilities near nice condo communities. They get you to put your barbecue grill and your golf clubs in there with an $80 storage offer that 6 months later balloons into a number that's worth more than the stuff you're storing. Does that sound familiar? Because now you know what a traditional opportunity zone investment looks like before the One Big Beautiful Bill Act changes that I'm about to discuss. In practice, pre-OBBA, the opportunity zone designation allowed a taxpayer to park capital gains in an opportunity zone fund and delay paying taxes for 5 years. After 5 years, the investor was forced to pay capital gains tax on the original investment, but not on the appreciation that accumulated during those 5 years. So far, so good, right? I agree. But the beautiful bill made it even better, especially for rural opportunity zones. Investors who stay in for 5 years are now treated as if they already paid taxes on 30% of their original investment. Now, they didn't pay any taxes, but they're treated as if they did. So at the 5-year mark, they pay capital gains tax only on 70% of their original investment and none of the appreciation that accumulated over those 5 years. So what that means is they end up waiting 5 years to pay a tax bill that's 30% less than it would have been if they had paid it 5 years ago when it was due. This is just fantastic, yes? But even that's not all of the upside in this new bill, in this new act. If the investor continues to hold the investment for an additional 5 years, which means 10 years total, they can take the appreciation out tax-free. Tax-free appreciation. We're back to the key word, right? Now, I know what you're thinking. 10 years is a long time. It is. So I promise to fix that problem at the end of this podcast episode today. I'm going to come back to that problem because it isn't something that the government should fix. The government is right to require a long holding period in exchange for tax-free money. And it's up to private funds to fix that problem if they choose to do so. Most don't. But the Rural Fund has chosen to fix the holding period problem for our investors. And I'll disclose that fix later in this episode today. For now, though, there's a second private sector problem that the government also can't do much about. And that's the historically low appreciation of rural assets. Remember, traditional opportunity zone funds are in big cities, urban cities. The storage facility around the corner from your condo is in Miami, right? Austin, Los Angeles, places where property values tend to go up over time. The OBBA shifted opportunity zones from urban cities like yours to rural towns where there's greater need for capital investment. You'll recall that opportunity zones are all about tax-free appreciation, the key word. It should be a ding right now. Despite the huge inducement of tax-free appreciation, most 1031 exchange investors steer clear of rural assets. Wait a minute, I just introduced a new term, 1031 exchange investors. So let me define that. In a nutshell, a 1031 exchange investor is someone who has invested in real estate, sold that investment, and now invests the proceeds from that sale into a different real estate deal to get special tax benefits like tax deferral. So they want to kick the can down the road in terms of when they pay their taxes. And then they keep rolling it over and keep kicking the can down the road. Now, these 1031 exchange investors tend to avoid rural assets. And why is that? A number of OZ fund managers were interviewed by the Wall Street Journal shortly after the passage of the OBBA this summer, 2025. They didn't believe that the beautiful bill's favoritism of rural areas would do much to spur investment in rural areas because of slow appreciation of rural property. Rural real estate usually does not appreciate quickly. So getting tax-free appreciation in a rural area isn't usually worth tying your money up for 10 years. Remember that holding period problem that I said I'm gonna fix at the end of this broadcast. But see, we have another problem we have to fix before we get to that, right? And that's this problem with rural appreciation. But see, I think the fund managers were looking at their own neighborhoods rather than looking at the overall rural opportunity zone market. While the government can't directly impact land appreciation, market forces can. We understand that at the Rural Fund. That's why we don't invest in random rural communities. Instead, we align ourselves with data centers. As you learned in our first podcast episode, data centers are potential anchor businesses around which to build communities. These anchor businesses bring in employees who have demand for services that don't usually exist in that rural community upon their arrival. This unmet demand gives investors, robber barons, an opportunity to solve pain points for people with the wherewithal to pay. Remember, an opportunity zone fund isn't just the real estate itself. Because remember, when you buy real estate directly, you get a deed. And you're lucky if your property value increases 50% over a decade. With a fund, however, a fund is a security. When you invest in it, you don't get a deed, you get shares back. And with shares, you're not depending solely on the real estate to appreciate, right? You know, when you buy some sort of investment that gives you shares, you get much more appreciation, much more increase in value over a decade than some 50% that you would get in a real estate, physical real estate asset that you purchased. And so we at the Rural Fund eliminate the low appreciation problem by using our real estate to house profitable operating businesses in rebounding communities, those that are rebounding with data centers, for example. The profits from those businesses increase the value of your shares in the fund. So with our fund, there's appreciation in the underlying real estate, and there's potential growth or appreciation in the business that's operating from that real estate. And as an owner of our fund, Your shares will represent ownership of both the real estate and a number of small businesses throughout the communities where we're invested. So hold the shares for 10 years and you get the appreciation on those shares tax-free, not just the appreciation on the real estate. So what could possibly be wrong with that? Why did I entitle this episode, "The Old BBBA Got Opportunity Zones Almost Right"? What's left? What else could they do? Well, I've talked about improvements the beautiful bill made over prior law on opportunity zones, but there's still a problem with who can invest in opportunity zones and get the tax-free appreciation that I've been talking about. The Rural Fund has solved that problem, but not every OZ fund has. So you need to understand that problem when you're deciding whether to invest. The problem is, without a private sector fix, only investors who are rolling over capital gains from a previous investment can benefit from the OBBA's opportunity zone rules. So only those 1031 exchange investors can benefit. That was the case with the previous urban opportunity zones, those storage facilities, those kind of investments as well. So only old money people could benefit. The government can and should fix that problem, because there's no reason, there's no tax reason, there's no policy reason to keep that prohibition in place against new money. It effectively prevents new investors from getting in on an investment, even if they're accredited investors. Accredited investors are those who are just qualified to do private investing that's not regulated by the SEC. So if the government's goal is to spur investment in rural communities, why limit the investment opportunity to old money, to 1031 exchange investors? If new investors, meaning those without capital gains to roll over, are willing to make long-term investments in rural communities, why not give them the tax-free appreciation as well? Why not incentivize them as well? Favoring old money is what the OBBA opportunity zone regulations did. If the Treasury issues new regulations under this new law, eliminating that disparity is something we should all push for during the comment period. That way, we could improve more of these economically distressed communities. From a tax standpoint, new money has been taxed at ordinary income tax rates. It's like an employee got paid their salary and they paid 50% almost in taxes at the state and federal levels combined. So that money's been taxed. By comparison, capital gains proceeds rolled over from another investment include appreciation that's never been taxed at all. So by favoring old money over new, the government is losing revenue. Distressed communities are missing out on investment from these new money investors, and qualified, accredited new money investors miss an opportunity to transition from the labor market, where they pay half their money in taxes, into the passive income system. And as another point, if you get these new money investors out of the employment labor market, that makes room for new young people who don't have the assets yet to do these kinds of investments. It makes room for them to take these jobs. So it is in the government's best interest, it's in the economy's best interest to allow new money investors into the OZ system. So the Rural Fund will look to educate Treasury on this issue the next time regs are proposed. And we'll ask you to reach out to them as well during the comment period. In the meantime, though, we can't wait for that. We've come up with a fix to let new money investors into our fund. It is less than a perfect fix because it requires investors who are not rolling over capital gains to have an 11-year holding period instead of a 10-year holding period, which gets us back to that problem that I said I was going to fix at the end of this episode. During that 11-year, the holding period is just too long for most people to be unable to access their money. So during that 11 years, or 10 years, whichever your holding period you're stuck with, we've arranged for our investors to be able to use their shares as collateral for a traditional bank loan. This allows you to access your money at rates that are far lower than the tax you'd pay if you took a dividend or if you sold your shares. It's how tech founders keep their shares in their companies and use those shares to finance their lives. It allows you to stay invested in the fund and take advantage of future appreciation on the fund's assets rather than cashing out prematurely and missing the benefits of these of this new law. So let me recap the issues resolved in this podcast episode, because we just solved a lot of problems that could make someone not want to not be able to invest. We fixed the problem of low appreciation in rural areas by investing in operating businesses. We fixed the problem of the law not letting in investors who don't have capital gains to roll over by adding a rollover bypass year. We fixed the holding period problem by permitting loans against your shares. In fact, we even fixed the problem that I didn't mention earlier. We fixed the problem of super high minimum investment requirements in most funds. Most private funds require a seven-figure investment to get in, but our fund requires only $50,000 to buy in. So, you know what they say. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't force it to drink. The rest is now up to you. I'm Siobhan Jones. I will be here next Monday when the topic is likely to be historic preservation in downtown and rural downtown districts. Share this podcast with your investment advisors and others who you want to be involved in the decision making so that they can get the same information that you're getting firsthand.